From Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, I'm Suzette Gorlat, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. R.C. Davis is the Executive Director of World Literature Today at the University of Oklahoma. His new book, Mestizos Come Home, explores how Mexican-American and Latino communities have changed the United States since the 1960s.
Beginning in the 1960s, the Mexican-American community was really enacting one of these periods of awakening in America.
We'll talk with Davis about his book on today's show. But first, Joshua Landis and I will discuss Donald Trump's first international trip as president and the impact of his visit to the Middle East.
What he thinks of the Middle East is fundamentally important. Will it really change American policy in the region? That's where I have a number of doubts.
That's all coming up after news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlat. Joshua Landis, I'm still in Rio. You're in the studio, but let's do an update about the Middle East, and especially President Trump's visit to the Middle East recently. He made his first international trip and went to Saudi Arabia and Israel, as well as other countries in Europe. But tell us about the trip to Saudi Arabia and Israel in particular, and how he was received, and how basically what is the perspective of how things went for him there?
Well, I think things went very well for him. This is an important trip. He got a lot of love in the Middle East, where he's not getting it in Washington, not from the Republicans or the Democrats at this time. So that was important for him domestically, but it was also important for America's traditional allies, Israel, Saudi Arabia, who have felt under President Obama that the United States was moving away from them, that the United States had been balancing with Iran. And this showed that President Trump is going back to traditional American policy, strong embrace for Saudi Arabia, strong embrace for Israel, and a lot of anti-Iranian rhetoric.
Well, so he did sign a rather large arms deal with Saudi Arabia. I mean, others have been, well, let's just put it this way. I mean, President Trump himself has been skeptical and critical of people in the Middle East. We obviously know what the rhetoric has been regarding his feelings about Muslims. Was there any fallout for that there on his trip, particularly to Saudi Arabia? And did he make up for that maybe by engaging in some additional agreements, arms agreements and others?
I think he's made up for it in certain parts of the Arab world. People were impressed by the way he was wooed by the Saudi government. His big golden chain, he liked the opulence. In a way, President Trump knows very little about the Middle East, and this was an eye opener. And many of the people around him, including cabinet members, came back saying how wonderful the hospitality was, how warm the greeting. So I think this is important as an icebreaker, and it may make the president thankful to the Saudis in a way that he was not thankful before, because they helped him a lot. And that's true in Israel as well, where he got a lot of affection. So in that sense, it may change the president's point of view, and that's very important. What he thinks of the Middle East is fundamentally important. Will it really change American policy in the region? That's where I have a number of doubts. We have to say that President Obama sold over $100 billion worth of arms to the Saudis as well. So this doesn't really change what America is doing in the region.
So it's kind of business as usual, it sounds to me. But two things. I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, obviously, Iran just completed their presidential elections. This trip came right on the heels of that. Rouhani won re-election. How does that affect this relationship? I mean, if he's going back to kind of traditional, you know, our traditional allies, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and that might be a signal of kind of, you know, anti-Iran, how does that election or does that election, the outcome of that election affect it at all?
Well, you're absolutely right. And the irony of this visit to a monarchy which brooks no opposition, and many of the Trump people were astounded that there was not one placard carrying Saudi that demonstrated against the monarchy. And that's because, of course, you're not allowed to do it. But in Iran, At the same time as the Trump visit was going on in Saudi Arabia, there were elections. Now, of course, Iranian elections are not absolutely free, but they're hotly contested. They're limited because the supreme guide, Khamenei, can only allow a certain number of candidates to run. But within that field, it's very intensely fought over. And so in that sense, this contrasted the authoritarianism of Arab governments with the circumscribed representation of Iranian elections. And it made one wonder, why are we siding with the authoritarians against those people that are at least have a level of democracy? So it did raise the question of alliances versus ideology and human rights. And that's something that President Trump is going to struggle with. He has really decided not to bring up questions of human rights in the Middle East, and that this is going to be transactional. We're going to stick with our traditional allies, and we're going to stick it to our traditional enemies.
All right, Joshua, thank you so much for the update, and as always, for your insight.
It's a pleasure.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. Leave your comments in the Worldview section of KGOU.org. Or you can like us, follow us, and interact with us on Twitter. We're at Worldviews KGOU, and I'm at Suzette Guerlot. Next, we'll talk about Mexican-American history and identity in the United States with R.C. Davis. I'm Suzette Guerlot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guerlot. R.C. Davis is the Executive Director of World Literature Today at the University of Oklahoma. I spoke with him about the release of his new book, Mestizos Come Home, which is published by the University of Oklahoma Press. R.C. Davis, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, R.C., you've got a very exciting book coming out. I can't wait to read it. Mestizos Come Home, Making and Claiming Mexican-American Identity. That's such a great title. I can't wait to hear what this book's about. So start there. Just tell us, what is this book about?
Well, I need to talk about it on just a couple different levels. On the most basic level, this is going to tell people about six ways that the Mexican-American and Latino community has changed the country since the 1960s, having to do with identity, land, popular culture, attitudes about the human body, a cultural voice, and then the really big deal rise of Chicano literature and Chicano studies. So, you know, people are going to learn a lot about the Mexican-American community, but it's got another message, and that is in the U.S. and across Latin America, and I'm not the first to talk about this, there's historically been a kind of amnesia about the indigenous and mixed-race peoples across the Americas. And this book is definitely a strike against amnesia, trying to bring much more awareness to the Mexican-American and Latino community. And also, this is a book that deals with some of the most really vexing issues of our time that have to do with what it means to be a citizen in the Americas, what is it to have a past in relation to the ancient peoples of the New Worlds. These are issues that we have not dealt with directly and adequately. So the book is really trying to open up some areas of discussion that have really been underattended to.
I'm particularly interested in your use of claiming Mexican-American identity in your title. But what is the claiming part of it? Does it have anything to do with reclaiming anything?
No, you're exactly right. Reclaiming is perfect. A kind of act of recovery, really. One of the traumatic things that's happened in the Americas over the last 500 years is that the people who are from the Americas don't feel that they are of or belong to the Americas. And they have a culture. They have a very rich culture that's made huge contributions, not just in the United States, but across Latin America. and have been made to feel sort of like the enemy very often, people that really aren't a part of things and are being marginalized economically and culturally. So beginning in the 1960s, the Mexican-American community was really enacting one of these periods of awakening in America. I think there's such a period going on right now where in response to the adversity of what they've been dealing with, they said, we are going to embrace our culture and we're going to learn our history. We're going to share our history with others. We're going to invite people in to learn about our culture. So it was a very deliberate act of cultural recovery that started in the 1960s.
You keep referring to the Americas, and I think this is an important point, is that we forget that, you know, it's a whole Western hemisphere. That's the Americas, the North America, Central America, South America. And we often tend to claim America or American as us, as the United States of America. We often are criticized for kind of claiming that when we say American foreign policy or I'm an American. What does that mean? I mean, so I've had Mexican citizens come to me and say, I too am an American. And so it's interesting that relationship and how a powerful country in this region has the ability to claim that identity as American, and then Mexican Americans and others in the Americas reclaim it. I think that's just, it's fascinating to me.
Well,
that relationship.
It is. And I think it goes back to the discussion that often comes under the heading of exceptionalism. And there are truly senses in which America, the United States of America, is an exceptional place. But one of the ways that that has a really bad influence is to encourage this kind of isolationist view where the true history in the Americas of the way colonialism came to the Americas through the British but also through the Spanish earlier, it's a story that shaped culture in the Americas. There's certain issues that can only, like race, that can only really be understood if you look across the Americas and don't just isolate one part. And I think the isolation of the U.S. from the rest of the Americas has been one of the strategies, frankly, that's marginalized indigenous people and mixed race people across the Americas. If you can break up the picture and just look at the parts individually and not see what's happened in the past, you've effectively erased the history of the Americas. And that's a very bad thing to do.
It's an important thing for us to remember. Well, I want to get to kind of these contemporary relations. It's no surprise to you and to others that there's perhaps this tense relationship right now between the United States and Mexico. There has been for a while. Obviously, border issues are what they are. We do have people from Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America coming across the border illegally, working in the United States, leaving whatever it is they leave behind. And there are all kinds of reasons why people migrate like this. But now we have these issues of walls being built and taxes being levied. And, you know, this is a very important partner, Mexico. And this relationship is a tough one. And so how is your book going to address it? What kind of reaction do you expect?
Yeah, I think what you're asking about really goes back to why I wrote the book. In the first Obama administration, I started to see that there was a kind of doubling down about racial slurs and more marginalization of people of color, particularly Mexican Americans and the black community in America. And I think for a while I thought, well, this is just the way multicultural complex societies like this work. People don't know enough about Mexican Americans. And then as we got into the second administration, Obama administration, I really got alarmed. And I saw that the kind of things that I teach at the University of Oklahoma and the book that I write would be illegal in Arizona. There was a really nasty kind of spirit moving through the country. And I realized that the lack of knowledge about the Mexican-American community was allowing people to turn Mexican-Americans and Latinos into the enemy very often. And that alarmed me. And so I doubled down in my own way and thought that what's needed first is just some historical perspective. We need to understand that Mexican Americans didn't just come here. Mexicans were in the Southwest before there was a United States. And the Mexican American community has made huge contributions. So I think lack of knowledge shapes the way people look at the border. The history of the border is very, very complex. The ability to bring people across the border as part of the workforce in the U.S. is historically very, very important. That cannot stop. Industry in the U.S., manufacturing would come to a halt. So I realized that historically it's possible to talk about these things now. It's possible to have the conversations about the Mexican-American community and its contributions and the ways in which the Mexican-American community, frankly, is making America better. The American idea of a multicultural democracy is an outrageously ambitious, wonderful goal. And the Mexican-American community has embraced that goal like few other communities, as few other communities have done. And I think when America understands all of that, I think it's going to change what they see happening right now.
You're listening to my conversation with R.C. Davis. He's the executive director of World Literature Today and the author of the new book, Mestizos Come Home. After the break, we'll talk about diversity in Mexico. I'm Suzette Guerlat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guerlat, the dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Our guest today is R.C. Davis, the author of the new book, Mestizos Come Home. Before the break, we were discussing the contributions that Mexican Americans have made to the United States. One of my favorite books, actually, is Many Mexicos. People don't understand that Mexico is actually a very big and very diverse country, and Mexicans cannot all be painted with the same brush, just like all Mexican Americans can't be painted with the same brush or any other set of Americans can be. This is a very diverse community. Do you touch on that at all in your book?
I do. I talk about that quite a lot, and an issue that really has to come up is the issue of race. Mexican Americans, I think, are viewed as people of color. Part of the amnesia about the culture and the history of the Americas is not dealing with race. And something that it really has never been talked about in Mexican-American studies or Chicano studies, mainly it's been discussed by people in art history, is the tradition of what they call in Spanish el sistema de casta, the casta system. And the Spanish created a whole very complex system of judging people according to their skin color and phenotype, their hair, eyes, et cetera. And these very complex issues like race, they always have a history. And you can never deal with them just by dealing with them in terms of what's visible, what's available now. You've always got to go back and see how they develop. So one of the things that I did was went back and looked really carefully at what was happening in the 18th century with the Casta system and how that event was happening right around the time that philosophers, political philosophers, and people that did sort of natural, what they used to call natural history in the 18th century, were naming white people Caucasians. All of this was being sorted out in the 18th century, and really sort of like bringing Atlantis to the surface. You know, bringing this history of how race happened in the Americas. It's a very specific history. We can talk about it, and the fact is, we are living with the tatters of that casta system now. If you live in the Americas and you look at the down at the skin on your hand or on your leg, you are looking through a lens that the Spanish created 500 years ago. Now, that system is not in place anymore, but we have still sorted ourselves out as communities based on race. And I think when people look at the underlying assumptions about race, most of the time, they wouldn't accept it. You know, that you can look at a person and through their the details of their hair and their eye shape and their eye color and their skin color, et cetera, you can know their destiny. You can know their value. I think when those assumptions are laid out, I think people are embarrassed by them. And I think we have to do more of that. The other thing, let me just add on here, is I think everybody should have a stake in what's happening in the Mexican-American community, because that community is teaching the entire country how to live in a very diverse, culturally very diverse, ethnically very diverse society. If Mexican-Americans can't pull this off, the implications for the culture are not good. They need to be able to succeed, because everybody's going to be following in their footsteps. The border will take over the whole country. We're going to become a border country with a very mixed and diverse community in the future. So we need to be able to see them succeeding.
Ultimately, in the end, what can we do, or what should we do? What should Mexican Americans do beyond, obviously, you know, educating and talking about these issues. Is there anything more that can and should be done?
Well, yeah, there are a couple things to say here. I think people need to see what's at stake. You know, I want Mexican Americans and Latinos to stop feeling like they need to apologize for being the place they come from, and they need to also feel that they belong there. And I want non-Latinos to understand better what Mexican Americans are trying to achieve and what they go through every day. But I think I'd like people in general to understand that there's more at stake in the response to the Latino community for the whole country than people may realize. That the American idea, as I said before, is just amazing. The founders had great blind spots, but the idea of a multicultural democracy, if you're here, you're family. You know, you belong. What that means is that every time a new community comes to the U.S., the country really reenacts its founding. So every time there's a new community, we're refining the love of cultural diversity. We're rediscovering liberty and freedom and new personal relations and bonds. We're renewing democracy and the ongoing challenge of social evolution and change. So when the country can do these things, the American idea is strengthened. When the country can't do these things, when it can't pull it off, the American idea dims and weakens. So the country really does have a stake in what happens to Latinos and Mexican Americans, because this is really about America. You know, the lasting frontier, I would say, of what makes America rare and enduring is this ability to embrace new communities and continue to reenact our founding.
R.C., thank you so much for being here today and sharing your story with us, and we look forward to reading your book.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to my conversation with R.C. Davis. He's the author of the new book, Mestizos Come Home. He also serves as the executive director of World Literature Today at the University of Oklahoma. KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma collaborate on the production of Worldviews. Our research is conducted by Katie Holland. This interview was edited by Jacob McClellan, and today's show was produced by Sam Dupre. For Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Gorlott.